Today's sponsor is Audible. With an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more, get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial at www.audible.com/GOT.
Today's podcast is also sponsored by Sonos, home theater for music lovers. For the first time ever, Sonos is offering listeners of the Game of Thrones podcast 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use the promo code GOT10, that's capital G, capital O, capital T, 10, at Sonos.com to receive this exclusive offer.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 7, Episode 7, titled The Dragon and the Wolf. It's our spoiler cast. Aaron's readying something that scares me.
Uh-huh. Oh, wait. I could just be checking, be checking my text absentmindedly.
While I'm doing the intro to
yeah.
the podcast?
Yeah.
Nope, he's got his phone in hand.
Every time you're talking, I'm checking my text.
Mentally, if
or
not
I'm,
physically.
I'm reading Reddit.
Yeah.
Spoiler podcast, more so than even normal. I would like to begin the podcast talking about one of my favorite subjects.
See, yep.
The Clegane Bowl. Well, you've
I knew it.
You've reduced me to this because you've stopped. I feel like you're not having fun the Clegane Bowl, man.
I feel like
you're not getting hype.
It's good. Look,
I've got my
loses,
hype t-shirt on, literally.
You literally do have a Clegane Bowl shirt on. It loses some of its luster if we do it every time we say
does
the words Clegane Bowl.
Does it
I think
really?
So, yes.
Does it really? Or does it just like keep wrapping around and being and being more and more fun and more and getting more and more hype?
I guess
here's the
that's
thing.
The eternal question.
I have a special relationship with the Clegane Bowl because it's like and I'm not saying like this is not a r/ I am very smart thing because the majority of the Martin shit flew right over my head. But when I was reading Feast and Dance, I got the clear impression that Gravedigger was the Hound and that Sir Robert the Strong or whatever the hell they call the zombie mountain in the books was actually a resurrected zombie mountain. Mm-hmm. And that you're going to – I didn't know what to call it. I didn't know what the internet's term of art was. But I'm like, oh, my God, won't it be so bad for or awesome for Sandor to finally get his revenge or
yeah.
get his head cut off or whatever. And I've gone from, you know – this being like a niche theory that people are like legitimately excited for, but like also didn't think it was going to happen to like, oh man, it's probably, it might happen to like, you know, it's essentially the show has confirmed that the Hound is still around and the mount to like, now we like I said on the show, we're getting their way in. Like,
yeah.
Is there any doubt in your mind that the Clegane Bowl will not happen?
Not really. No, at this point, it seems almost a foregone conclusion.
When the Hound himself says, you know who's coming for
yeah.
you, brother, you've always known. Like, he's not talking about anyone but himself.
Uh-huh.
Thus, I mean, there's no man as accursed as the Hype Slayer, Jim. You got to get on board with me with this.
Well, I think you just did it correctly. You didn't say the word. You just use the sound to symbolize, to evoke the word. I think that's taking it to another level that I appreciate. So,
right.
Yeah, yeah. If we can keep evolving it as a concept, I'm on board.
The only question I have is how exactly, because the traditional
yeah.
Clegane Bowl was at the end of Dance of Dragons, Cersei is imprisoned by the Faith Militant.
Mm-hmm.
She needs a champion. There's none of this horse shit, Tommen. Well, I mean, it might come. Banning trials by combat.
Right.
Faith Militant calls on its best champion. Sandor, fighting out of the Quiet Isles, answers the call
mm-hmm.
and, you know, has to slay the mountain to I guess, kill Cersei.
You know, if I had done that pod pack episode
uh-huh.
of our podcast before the Tommen stuff happened with him banning
uh-huh.
the trial by combat,
right,
I would have had a bigger problem with it because it's like a core piece of that religion. It's like one of their customs, and to just sort of kind of up and ban a custom or a ritual or something,
yeah,
is like a bigger deal than they made it seem on the show. And I wish I had known that at the time.
Huh. It's interesting because, you know, speaking of the that religion segment you did for the Pod Pack, like I, you know, we talked about on that how that that the Faith of the Seven is most analogous to like Roman Catholicism. And how that has, like, you know, even though, you know, you've gone from its, like, you know, when was the peak power of Catholicism? It's hard to say because it's still a very strong institution. But you got to say, like, when they're rolling around doing inquisitions on people and, like, they're essentially serving as the judge, jury, executioner, as the lawmaking body, and, you know, the like, multiple
branches.
The moral
authority. Everything,
and everything.
Yeah.
Like, they're making and breaking kings. That's, like, their height. And you can see them as like having an institution's had its power slowly chipped away, and it waxes and wanes. It's like, you know, you see in the Western world, like, you know, religion is kind of being not swept aside, but like secularism by and large seems like it's getting ascendancy. But then you also then have a pushback against that. I guess, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with Tommen banning it because I just see that as part of the push and pull, the pendulum swing of the religion's relationship. And
I guess I would have had a more nuanced take on how the people would view it because you could see it more as like this institution, a lot like Catholicism, which at times is less influential in people's lives, and times more. And I think at that point, when the Faith Militant comes back into the picture, it's probably less so. Important to the people. So when Cersei goes and blows up the Great Sept, how, you know, people are going to have a problem with it, but how strongly will they feel about it?
Right. Well, that's the other thing is like there's a little bit, I mean, that's been a little low-key disappointment, the fact that Cersei has, you know, you're right, Tribal Combat would not only be a tradition, but it's probably a popular one because blood sports have always been popular.
Right.
So the fact that, you know, is there like a very minor plot point that the King's Landing population was really dismayed by the Mountain versus the Viper? That, like, you know, just like us, like, the Oberyn was the favorite, and then, like, the fact that he got killed, and did that actually feel like justice?
I don't know.
And it does seem like, it's kind of only, like, a lord's right. You know, a peasant can't be like, the king's accusing me of something, and I demand trial by combat. Like, I don't know. And also the other thing is it seemed like that was a clear manipulation of Tommen by the faith. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it came, it's like if the Pope himself comes up and says, you know what, fish on Friday is no longer a thing.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be accepted by the people more so than if, like, you know, that came from within.
Yeah,
but that also, it's funny because that also is exposed the High Septon for kind of the charlatan he is. He's a political animal. It's like it's not about God so much as it's about his own power.
Yeah.
So
the biggest, I guess, problem I have with the sound effect you just played, to not name it, is getting them Clegane boys back together.
Mm.
Like how does that happen again? It's already happened once, and I thought the moment would have come, and we would have had our showdown.
Yeah, because
now it's going to be more difficult, I feel, to get them back together the second time because the treachery is on.
Yeah, and here's the thing: like, to me,
and it's in the open.
The Clegane Bowl has always been bound up with the Valonqar theories because you're right. If you game plan out, like, why would the Mountain and the Hound fight again? Well, it's because the Northern Targaryen alliance has defeated the White Walkers.
Okay, yeah.
They are now marching on King's Landing. They breached the wall. They're going through the Red Keep. They're looking for Cersei.
Yeah.
Sandor is on the vanguard. He busts into the throne room, and that's just it's the Mountain versus the Hound.
Yeah.
But then if the Hound slays the Mountain, you'd think he'd go ahead and then kill Cersei.
Maybe he distracts the Mountain while another little brother goes in and kills Cersei.
Because that's the thing, like, so
just all the little brothers together in one room.
Well, that's, like, that goes back to the email we got a couple of weeks where you got essentially people run a train on strangling Cersei.
Just, yeah, but
all
it'll be
the
little
candidates
brothers
line up, yeah. Because that's the thing. Like, I guess, is there a way that, like, maybe Jamie is part of that? Because now that Jamie, that's the thing that another right. shoe that's dropped is Jamie's is joined the Northern Targaryen Alliance. Which
we think so. I mean, is he going to be accepted? You know, how will that work out?
That's because the good guys are even if Jamie was a double agent, I think they'd be too stupid to, you know, that's the whole thing. Good is dumb. They triumph over evil because the plot requires it mostly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I thought it'd be also a good idea to do a Valonqar roundup, because I got so many emails about this. Because like, you know, now that like Jaime could be in this vanguard too, so you got this thing where like the Hound is essentially keeping the Mountain busy while Jaime is, I don't know, strangling Cersei. Because he's definitely number one on the list. Jaime is technically her younger brother, and he is probably got the most. Because there's an intersection between who's the most appropriate little brother, who's the one that's got the most personal connection with Cersei, and what would be the most satisfying dramatic twist or irony of the situation of this prophecy, which doesn't exist in the show. Mm. Yeah, so you got Jaime, he's up there because he's, you know, he's always loved Cersei. Cersei's kind of like, you know, taking advantage of him or taking him for granted. Mm-hmm. He's the younger brother. And she'd never see it coming. But then, you know, obviously if he's at the head of the vanguard sweeping the red, she would certainly see it coming.
Right.
So you're right. It's hard to get the pieces to fit. Tyrion's almost too obvious, because that's what Cersei's feared her entire life.
Yeah.
So it's like almost can't be Tyrion. The Hound.
He's a practice strangler, though.
He is a practice strangler.
Can do it.
He has. Yeah. He's choked out already one woman that tried to sell him up the river. The Hound is interesting because he is also a little brother.
It's true. Yeah.
And he's also that makes the most logical sense, because if he is going to kill the Mountain and the Mountain is Cersei's bodyguard, then he's going to be proximate to her demise. So why can't he just do it?
And he does have, you know, the prior relationship with the Crown, right? Like,
right.
He started off in King's Landing as an enforcer. So, like, that's could be satisfying dramatically.
You've got Euron, who is, you know, Balon Greyjoy's younger brother, and he is now all mixed up in Cersei's business. He is ruthless and treacherous and would not hesitate to strangle someone if he needed to.
Yeah.
But also, that would be kind of like from Cersei's perspective and out of nowhere.
Sure, yeah.
And there's no personal connection there.
Which makes it very much less satisfying for me.
Right. Now we're moving on down the viability list. One that keeps being mentioned is Cersei's unborn child.
Okay.
Assuming it's a male heir, women die in child. We've talked about the game of pubic bones, the game of hip bones, like people, women die in childbirth, not infrequently, especially in medieval times. Is that satisfying? And also the words of the prophecy is wrapped its hands around your pale throat,
right?
So is that a great one?
Not for me. I mean, some people might like it more than I do, but not really.
Okay. Because that's the thing, is like, it certainly qualifies as a Valonqar if it's a baby boy. It would certainly be some kind of dramatic irony for Cersei. I guess there's a personal relationship, but the personal relationship a mother has with their unborn child.
Yeah, it's a one way street.
And also, it just does. It lacks the element of, I guess, the tragedy, or the pathos, because it's just something.
It lacks intent, which.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks as far as dramatic concerns go.
Right, right. And it feels like it's like a little bit of a dud of the prophecy. Theon, the thing that Theon's got going is he is a little brother, and also Yara has conspicuously called him such.
Yeah.
In both the books and the show, almost like as a way to, like, in retrospect, it's like he's a dark horse candidate, but in retrospect, you could be like, oh man, they put the word little brother in her mouth over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. But where's the personal relationship to Cersei?
Exactly.
Where's the dramatic irony?
Yeah, super unsatisfying for me.
Yeah.
If that's how it goes.
Yeah. It's clever, but not satisfying.
Right.
And finally, Arya wearing Littlefinger's face. Now, I don't think that so Peter is a little brother, although I think...
No, but would she be a little brother with his face? Because she's a little sister right now. If she was disguised as a male...
And Littlefinger's called little, you know, he's got the whole little thing, you know.
Okay,
he's got
yeah.
that motif going.
Uh-huh.
I just don't
might
know
be able to get away
that.
With it, and I do think it's somewhat dramatically satisfying, right? Like, Arya has had this list forever. Mm-hmm. Cersei's been on it forever. And for her to kill Cersei, I think, would be satisfying, certainly.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and we'll find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
I got a new theory that I've not seen before, which got me excited, from Michael C., that has like a very unique twist that got me excited here. Says, I'm very much a casual watcher slash book reader, but I've thought on the whole Valonqar prophecy, and I wanted to get your feedback on it. One word on the prophecy from Maggie DeFrog is pale. The Valonqar will wrap his hands around your pale neck. Could it be that her neck is sliced open by someone else, such as Arya's Littlefinger, while Jaime is holding her neck, trying to staunch the flow of blood, ultimately choking the life out of her unintentionally? Or the fact that she's dying from the throat wound. But I can see that in my mind's eye, like Arya or someone slashing her throat, and Jaime, even though he doesn't like her and he's fighting against her side, being horrified and going and like wrapping his hands around her throat to try to save her, but he can't. So that, I think, ticks off all of the things. It's dramatic irony. It's got a cleverness in a prophetic sense. And the thing that keeps bugging me about the whole Valonqar thing is it's just not – like I think that the Double D's What do you think is the likelihood that George Martin told them in bullet point form who actually killed Cersei?
I think it's pretty likely.
I think it's pretty highly likely too, because he wrote the prophecy and he had to have in mind someone.
Right.
So I think they know who that someone is, but they are under no obligation to do the details to match up the prophecy that they left out of the show.
Sure. Yeah.
So I can see that scene in my mind's eye, and it would work with or without the knowledge of the prophecy. And if you know the prophecy, it's just a giant wink and a nudge to the book readers that are watching the show. But I think, you know, it just works as a dramatic scene. Jaime, you know, wanted her to be defeated, but didn't want it to be like this.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, it's head and shoulders like Jaime. Jaime is, in my mind, the clearest, most obvious choice for this whole thing.
Right.
Because it's just the most satisfying on every level.
Right.
But yeah, I suppose it could be a combination of people.
Let's talk about the Night King, because my God, people are really buying into Night King theories right now. Night King
All right,
is secretly Bran. Night King is secretly Jon. The Night King is secretly the Lord of the Lights.
Catelyn, can we get Catelyn in there? She hasn't been seen for a while.
Night King is secretly Lady Stoneheart.
Yep.
The thing is these things are... Like, here's my personal theory.
Uh-huh.
I don't think the Night King is anybody but the Night King.
I could go there with you,
He might be tapped into the dark side of the Force, that the Lord of the Light is tapped into the light. Like, they might have a spiritual connection like that.
Okay.
Like, the Emperor is connected to Yoda, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, like, they're not literally the same person. I like the idea that, you know, because I did this big segment back in Season 4, and it's all, you know, as always, all of the archives of the spoiler section where I actually do a deep dive in theory are all listed in the show notes. You can click through. You can see the episode. You can get linked to the episode. And it's got a timestamp of when I start talking about it. But there's one about, like, rethinking the Night's King, the others, the Starks, and a lot of other different stuff. Where I did a deep dive into all this, the Night's King and 13th Lord Commander, and what does it mean that a Stark has to always be in Winterfell?
Mm-hmm.
One of the ideas, and these goes back, these theories have been going around for many, many years, is that the reason the Night King is causing trouble, the reason the others are marching, is because humanity has forgotten some long-term obligation of the ceasefire.
Yeah.
That we've stopped giving tribute, we've stopped giving our quota of man flesh for them to turn into others, or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, I wonder if there's going to be this thing where... maybe the Night King is like some kind of force of nature, something that keeps some sort of balance. And it's like a Davy Jones thing from the Pirates of the Caribbean, where you can't not have a Davy Jones. So, like, they defeat the Night King, but you have to have another Night King. So Jon Snow or Bran or someone becomes the Night King.
Hmm.
But I don't talk about that theory because I have not a shred of evidence. It's essentially, wouldn't it be cool if...
Right.
Like, it builds a little bit of, like, well, there's some kind of obligation we don't understand, and, like, there's some kind of cosmic force that mankind has forgotten about, but, like, there's no real hard set evidence.
Sure.
Yeah. And people love to look at, like, the way the Night King is dressed and the way that the, you know, but it's just
the,
like,
change of actor. Right.
Do
they change him to make him look more like Bran?
Right.
No.
They just couldn't afford to have Joe Chill anymore.
Why'd they change the mountain 16 times?
Right.
Is it to look more like Cersei? No, right. Come on.
The first guy was kind of an asshole. The second guy was too skinny. And then they got the one.
Right.
They got the ones just right. Yeah, I don't know. I just the thing is, like, you can't just write in and say, I think the Night King is Bran thoughts. Like, and you can't just say the Night King and Bran dress the same thoughts. Because, like, as we talked about, the Night King dresses like a warrior from the North, which...
Mm-hmm.
It's not a stretch to say he was, because back when the Night King and the others and the men first tussled, they were the first men. Everyone on Westeros was the first men. They were all Northerners.
Yeah.
So it would make a lot of sense if he had the same dress. Like, he looks a lot like the Night's Watch. Does that mean the Night's King and the Night Watch are connected? Maybe.
I mean, last episode, I thought Cersei and Daenerys looked a lot alike.
They did. They're both
in their queenly
garb.
What
are they trying to suggest? Is right. Dany and Cersei the same person?
Of course fucking not. It's just a motif. It's just an aesthetic, people.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. It's like, so I guess going forward, because, you know, even when we go on to, like next week is all about recapping Season 7, and we're going to start recapping Season 2.
Yeah.
And traditionally, we have a spoiler section where we talk about just general open-ended stuff and whatnot. Going forward, like, I feel like since this show, anyone can be anyone because of innumerable magical devices. You got the faceless men, you got glamoring, you got all this other shit that, you know, it's like in a world like if shape-shifting was a thing, mm-hmm. like video evidence of someone committing a crime would be worthless in court. Because it could just be like, well, we all can shape-shift, so you'd need some other extraordinary evidence to convict someone of the crime. I feel like we need to put that standard in place that, like, you have to have really good evidence pointing towards something. It can't just be a cool idea because there's a billion cool ideas out there that might be true or not.
Right.
And the only way to give one currency over the other is hardcore evidence. So
yeah.
Anyway, I don't think the Night King is anybody but the Night King. But I've also been wrong many times before. I'm going to try to keep this short because we got a lot of stuff to get to. We have a wrap-up week of Game of Thrones coming up next week where we put Season 7 to bed. We got a full podcast. It's going to be loaded with feedback about the season and maybe some thoughts of what's coming ahead. And then we also will have a podcast wrapping up the spoiler section. We're going to have our buddy Kim Renfro come on to talk about theories and speculation. We also have our Stranger Things coverage kicking off real soon. We're going to rewatch the first season in anticipation for the second. Mr. Robot's coming up. American Horror Story Cult. Me and Cecily are going to start covering that next week. Walking Dead's coming soon. Done with summer. We're moving into fall. Yeah. Lots of stuff going on at baldmove.com. Check it out.
And in addition to all that stuff, we also have the Pod Pack going on right now, Game of Thrones Pod Pack. It's a project I set up over the course of the last month or so. To gather a bunch of the Game of Thrones podcasters, about 10 of them, and get each one to produce a special episode of their podcast and package it all up into a nice pod pack.
Whom is among this august company?
Oh, man, we got so many good people. We've got the Cast of Thrones. We've got the Game of Microphones from Podcastica. We've got Pod of Thrones. We've got A Storm of Spoilers. We got Bald Move. We got Jay and Jack. We got
Cast of Kings.
Yeah, sure. Why not? We got them all. We didn't.
Asterix, some podcasts not included.
We definitely didn't get them all, but we got a lot of good ones. And I think you will enjoy it if you go check it out. If you go to podpack.baldmove.com, you can go read all the details. It's a good thing that we're doing for charity. We're also getting some of these podcasters paid a little bit of money as well. And I think it's a pretty cool thing, and a lot of people have been signing up so far.
And also, we decided, we already had this charity picked out before the hurricane hit Texas, but we've decided, and it's too late to change a lot of those details. But Jim and I have decided that our cut that's going to Bald Move for our efforts, we're going to donate to the Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, which is actually it's a local charity created by the mayor of the town and the county judge, I guess. Mm. And it's going to be because there's a thing. This is a city of 6 million people. It's so flooded. There's like 80,000 homes are going to be destroyed. That's people that are going to be out of a place to live for years to come. Like if Katrina is any example for how long it's going to take to get Houston back on its feet, it's going to need a lot of money over a long time. So, if we had just decided this a week ago, we probably made the whole thing about it. But we're going to take our cut and give it to Houston and the surrounding areas and the Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund. So, yeah. And they're all unique podcasts based on a little extra information that you're not going to get in the course of our regular coverage.
Yeah, a little twist on the regular show that everybody's doing.
Right. So you can get that at podpack.baldmove.com. Get some good stuff for your ears. We're going to be missing Game of Thrones. Help out your fellow help out your favorite podcasters and help some good causes. Podpack.baldmove.com.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Audible. And if you've listened to our podcast before, you're no stranger to the Audible service.
Yeah, Audible supported Bald Move for a long time.
They have.
We're grateful for them.
You know, we're like the hair club for men. We're not just promoter, we're also customers.
We're also the president. We're ripping off the Arya's mask. We're the president of Audible. It's been a scam this whole time.
Yep.
Getting paid coming and going.
No, but we have both signed up for Audible in the past. And I don't know about you, but I'm still currently a customer. I really enjoy their service. They provide a lot of audiobooks, a ton. Like pretty much any book you can think of that is mainstream enough and is not like 100 years old.
Like, for example, the entire works of The Song of Ice and Fire by one George R. R. Martin.
Right.
Unabridged.
Yeah, or if you want to get ready for the King Killer Chronicles stuff, they've got that stuff up there. They've got
Ready Player One.
Ready Player One's up there. That's how I listen to it. Yeah, it's a really good service, and it's actually really cheap for what you get. Like, I look at the prices of a lot of those audiobooks, and I'm signed up monthly, so every month I get a credit for an audiobook.
Right.
And some of those books are $25, $30 a shot, but I'm paying, you know, $16 a month. So that's pretty good value for me.
Right. Yeah, and I like the fact they got this thing where, like, you know, you can't make more time, that you essentially just make the best use of it, and that Audible allows you the times where you might be otherwise playing Candy Crush or listening to Spotify. Not that there's anything wrong with listening to music, but if you want to, you know, maybe have a little bit more edification, it allows you to steal those moments. And since it's compatible with every, like, mobile phone, yeah, smartphone on the planet, there's an Audible app. It's an awesome way to do that. And if you're like me, like, I like to read first rather than be read to. What's awesome is that if you have a Kindle or a device that reads Kindles, you can use the same WhisperSync technology that synchronizes where you're at in the book across all your different platforms.
Yeah.
Same stuff works for Audible. So it's super cool to, like, read a chapter of Game of Thrones, or even get in the middle of the chapter and my eyes close and I put the book down at night, get in my car the next morning, fire up Audible on the way to work, and bam, it starts right from where I left off from reading. And that's really cool. And the player's got all these cool features where you can increase the speed of the person that's reading, the narrator. You can decrease it. There's all kinds of ways that you can control it and have control of the listening experience.
Yeah, and like you, I like to jump in my car and listen to that. I got like a 20-minute drive to work to and from every day. So I get through about a book a month doing that with the Audible service, just listening in the car, honestly. And you can do it during chores, whenever.
Yeah, and if you do choose the Game of Thrones package, I will say that the narrator, Rory Deutrice, is a really cool guy. In fact, he played the Pyromancer in season 2. And he's got he's like a man of 1,000 voices. He does all these different... Oh, you didn't know that?
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, yeah, he's the old, like, oh, you got the wildfire so strong. Yeah, he's got all these different accents and dialects and pitches that he uses, and it's really entertaining to listen to him read.
Yeah, that's cool. So if you would like to take advantage of Audible's offer, you can go to audible.com/GOT, and you get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial. Again, that's audible.com/GOT. In case you don't know how to spell Audible, it's audible.com/GOT.
All right, let's get to the feedback. Game of Thrones at baldmove.com. Again, we are doing a full production spoiler podcast next week as an addition to a regular non-spoiler wrap-up. Kim Renfro said she's definitely coming on to the podcast. I'm recording a segment with her on Wednesday, so it'll be super, super fun, and we're going to keep this going through season 2, too. Andrew M., I want to ask you something concerning the Night King. I hear everywhere that we've seen the creation of him, but why is everyone so certain of that? When Bran Green sees the White Walkers' origins, he says, "You created the White Walkers." No one says the Night King specifically, and we don't see little crown spikes sprout from his head, so I don't see what definitively distinguishes him from any White Walker.
I mean, he's the first of his kind, so we assume he would be the king.
The big smoking gun is entirely meta, that the same actor, Vladimir Furtick, plays both the Northerner, who's being, like, having the obsidian shoved into his heart by the Children of Forest, and the Night King.
Okay.
So that's meta, but it's also a really damn good reason to suspect they're the same person. And in absence of strong evidence otherwise, it's just one of the things where who else would he be? He's like White Walker Prime.
Yeah.
And he's got the crown to kind of, you know. So, I mean, if you want to doubt it, that's fine.
I guess why would you assume he's not?
Right.
I suppose, yeah, if you want to take a stance on something, a positive statement of fact, you have to have proof
So one idea would be, like, if he was not that person, then it could be that the others, the White Walkers, were a force for good, or at least a force that fought on the Children of Forest side, and that the Night King is a subversive force. Like, he's like a demonic entity that maybe subverted them for their truth. But you're already way into fan fiction. Like, everything I just said is made up to justify talking about it.
Also, with what we know of how the mechanics of the White Walkers work, wouldn't the first one to turn still have to be alive for any of them to be alive?
What do you mean by that?
Like, if everyone that that one of the White Walkers has turned, every white, I guess I don't know if we, do we know if that idea that if you kill a White Walker, all of its whites dies, applies to White Walkers as well?
That's the thing, we don't. I mean, yeah. Barrick asserted it as true, but we don't know.
Well, we don't, like, I don't know if there's, like, if you kill if the two different King, classes are, yeah, do all the other White Walkers die?
Right. Or, and also, we also don't know, did the Children of the Forest just create one White Walker?
Right.
The, who became the Night King 100. That then sired everybody else? Or did they create, like, a dirty dozen or however arbitrary number that,
right.
We don't know that.
Don't know enough yet. Yeah.
Anyway, Matthew L. says, you guys brought up whether the Night King should have been burned, but when or can be burned or destroyed by fire, but when he walks through the flames receded. The flames appear to be chest mm-hmm. high. They go down to his ankles as he approaches and then launches his ice spear.
Yeah, but it's not dragon fire.
That's, see, so, this, like, is,
this is what we talk about when we say, oh, can someone walk through burning carts after the dragons set them on fire?
Right.
Who knows?
I mean, and that's like, this just goes back to my days of debating Star Trek versus Star Wars. There's a person who'll say, Picard said the main deflectors of the Enterprise D, no laser can penetrate them. Uh-huh. Like, they like, oh, you have to have phasers. Lasers, old technology. And they will use that to then say that the Enterprise D could shrug off the Death Star blast.
Right.
Now, if you believe the Enterprise D can put up more resistance than the entire planet of fucking Alderaan, uh-huh. I don't know what to tell you. Because, like, there's a difference between a small fire that this guy could just by his natural coldness and badassery can overcome and even suppress,
mm-hmm.
and, like, Drogon just fucking
like
pouring
blast.
It on right
yeah.
on him.
Yeah.
Or wildfire.
I mean,
or
the guy
like that.
The guy couldn't knock down the fucking wall, but
right.
a dragon could.
Right. Like, you know, there's like, if you're wearing a fire retardant race suit, that doesn't mean you can jump into a volcano. There's
right.
limits to all of this stuff. And granted, it's yeah. magic, so
we don't know where the limits are.
We don't know what the limits are, or and there's possible that there are no limits. Like, maybe Danny could like
maybe.
Swim in lava. Who the fuck knows?
And maybe the Night King can walk through literally any amount of fire he'd like.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, physically, I don't think Dany could swim through lava because lava is liquid rock, and she would, you know, I don't think she could actually sink through it. But
no, I don't know. Scrooge McDuck can swim and run.
That's right, right.
So, who knows?
I mean, like, why don't we talk about that for a minute? Like, how can a duck swan dive 100 feet into essentially solid metal,
right,
and not completely break his neck? Does he have some magic? Is he impervious to money?
I think we could probably go into this on a Bald Move TV.
If you dropped a ton of gold bullion on Scrooge yeah. McDuck, would it kill him?
No,
or would
he'd
he just
swim.
Like swim through it like
he
nothing.
Would.
All yeah. right, well, we got that solved anyway. Look forward to our DuckTales podcast.
Yeah,
coming to our Disney coverage soon. Josh L. In episode 5 of this season, as Sam tries to convince the Maesters of the true threat of the Whites. One of the learned dicks says, don't forget the prophet Lodos, who claimed the drowned god would rise up and destroy Aegon the Conqueror. Now that we know that Jon's true name is Aegon, I think we have to accept the possibility that this prophecy is actually about Jon. The
oh,
conquering
boy.
Bit could just be about Jon's fight to reclaim the land of Westeros from the others. In the books, Euron claims to actually be the drowned god. The line is in retort to Dampier, who says that Euron is mocking the drowned god. I do not mock the drowned god. I am the drowned god.
All right. This is a theory with some supporting evidence.
Seems odd to just drop that bit of information to the show without reason. All this being said, do you see Jon falling to Euron? It seems like Euron is playing a bigger role in the end game of all this. Would you be satisfied if Euron comes back and ends up being a pivotal character despite having such little TV time?
I would have at the beginning of this season, but with how
right.
how heavily they've leaned into the Euron stuff, maybe not.
Yeah, and what is that guy's? I did the panel with Booth, Emmett Booth.
Emmett, yeah,
does poor Quentin. He's got this whole elaborate theory that he's worked up essentially ever since the Forsaken chapter from The Winds of Winter was leaked out, or not leaked out. Martin released it as a preview.
Yeah,
because he's almost done 3 years ago. And he's got this whole theory that, like, this is Martin's... Because Martin is, like, he's got the Frankenstein myth that he's woven in with with Gregor. Hmm. He's got zombies. He's got arguably werewolves in the form of the Starks warging and their sigil of being the wolf. You know, some people think he slyly put in a vampire reference with Roose Bolton. By the way, check out the spoiler archive if you want to see that awesome theory. It's, I think, the first one I did. They're like that he's got this idea that, like, he's paying homage to all these, like, horror tropes. And, you know, a big one would be, like, the Cthulhu mythology. And, mm-hmm. like, they've got the Kraken theme, and they've got the Deep Ones, and they've got the Drowned God. And, like, all this stuff lines up very, very neatly. And he's got this fairly – I mean, I think it's a kind of like in the batshit tinfoil theory. But, like, it's very well referenced and a lot of evidence behind it.
Cersei has acid blood like the aliens.
Yes.
Xenomorphs.
Yes. So, but they're not fire. The Xenomorphs notably not fireproof.
That's true.
Flamethrowers sort their hash out. That's canon.
Sure, too.
The Double Ds are a playful bunch, a playful pair. I wonder if they would do that just because they saw, like, you know, Emmett's theory and thought it was funny or thought it was cool or clever and, mm-hmm. like, threw that in. Or, like I've been talking about a lot of the season, you know, we could see a full-blown Cthulhu-type Locutus of Borging of Euron, and, like, all these theories could be, like, just no shit, like, legitimately on the table.
Yeah, no, the reintroduction of Euron surprised me, and it continues, I guess, to confound me as to exactly what they're trying to do with him.
Right.
And so that's a good theory as any, and it has some supporting evidence.
And I also don't think that he's there to just do Cersei's bidding. He doesn't seem like a lackey.
No.
So, like, what is his actual game? Is his actual game going to be to try to woo Dany? Is his actual game going to... And also, what kind of... Because there's so much to the Greyjoy plot in the books, like, is if the Double Ds are, like, trying to, like, you know, take Victarion and Euron and mash them together and kind of do a mishmash of their plots, like, that's who knows what they're up to.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think you're right that Euron's going, like, if you think that Euron's going to go pick up the gold company with Cersei's gold and come out here and fight her war for her, I just don't see it.
Yeah.
I think that's why I think that
it'd be
we're supposed to understand that Cersei's plan is a foolish one in the same vein of arming the faith. Like, this is the step. We're at the stage where she's armed the faith militant and thinks she's solved all of her problems.
Yeah.
She has formed the alliance with Euron Greyjoy for his ships, and here's all these wagons full of gold for you to go over to Essos and get this army for me so you can be – and I will fuck you over in the end because I'm really in love with my brother.
Yeah.
We just haven't seen the step where the High Sparrow arms his guys and arrests the royal family and and takes her to the Black Cell and shaves her hair and shames her. Uh-huh. We haven't got to that point in the story yet.
Yeah, I would actually say – you know, if I'm looking at Euron and I'm saying, okay, how does Dany feel about him at the moment? She's probably pretty pissed at him. She probably hates his guts because he destroyed her fleet, right?
Sure, yeah.
But could that all be just sort of getting her in a position of like being over a barrel where she kind of needs the ships he's going to have?
Are you saying that's Euron's version of pulling her pigtails on the schoolyard?
Not exactly.
But yeah, no.
It's more to like get her in a position where she needs him
right.
for something, for the thing he's got, which is the fleets.
Right.
The fleet and the army. Maybe? Yeah. Maybe? But I don't know. There just isn't enough on the table yet. The cards aren't out there.
I hate the Greyjoys more than anyone. I really, really was bummed when they came back into the plot. But I gotta say, even as a hater, there's gonna be something big coming. He's gonna be a major part of next season and probably gonna be engineering a twist or two, if not three. So
okay, he's a new little finger.
And I've stopped worrying and I've learned to love the Greyjoys. So yeah. Hopefully everyone can too. Matt B., I don't know if it's been mentioned before, but you've been talking about the Season 7 Magnificent 7 plot being stupid, and the plan to go north of the wall to grab a white just seemed contrived to get the Night King, hit the Night King getting a dragon bullet point. In the books, we have Victarion Greyjoy and the Chekhov's gun at the horn that can bind a dragon, a.k.a. the Dragon Binder.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, at some point, that horn has to be used. My guess in the books is the way we get from to the Ice Dragon is the Victarion uses the horn to bind one of Dany's dragons. The Red Priest he rescued from the water convinces him that he should go north to attack the Night King to end the war between the dead and the living, which is R'hllor's goal, and B, impress Danny enough that she wants to marry him, his own stated aim. If he goes north and loses the dragon, then this seems to make more sense in the book, and this isn't a silly contrived plot point that would fit in with his character's goals. That would fit in with his character's goals to impress and be the conquering hero. What do you think of that, Jim?
That he takes the horn that we haven't really been privy to in the show at all.
Well, he's saying this is instead of using the books to try to understand the show, this is using the show to try to understand where the books are going.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So you care about, I guess I shouldn't ask you this. I should take this myself because you don't care so much about that other one.
Yeah, to me, the horn is a non-existent sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of talk about the horns. Like, it would be interesting if the horn, because here's the thing. Victorian is an idiot and nothing good is going to come from his plot. Like, he's essentially a bigger, more strapping, scarier Quentin in my book. But it would be interesting if he actually does bind a dragon and loses it to the Night King. So that'd be a way to do that. It'd also be interesting if it turns out that this dragon binder doesn't bind dragons. It tears down the wall or something. Because there's also the Horn of Jorimund, which...
confuse the two horns and blow the wrong one and whoops.
Well, but like the Horn of Jorimund, I don't know if that's a real thing. No. Or if that's something that the wildlings invented as kind of like a big bluff. Like, it seems for all the world in the books that that's what it is, but if it was based on something real, maybe the dragon binder is actually the Horn of Jorimund. I don't know, but there's too much talk of magical horns in the book for there to come up for nothing to come of them.
Yeah,
it seems to me. While we're on the topic of horns, Eric C., in the spoiler podcast, you talked about the Night King getting a dragon and or getting a white being a plot in the books. I doubt it. The Double D's lost a plot point at the Horn of Jorimund, which is supposed to bring the wall down, and I think they needed to find a new way to get the wall down. An ice dragon seems like the answer.
I feel like that's such a huge development that to just do it in the show when George had no guidance on a frost dragon or whatever.
Did you watch the behind the scenes this week?
I didn't know.
Okay, because the way they talked about it when they were saying we're in the writer's room and we knew that that whatever brought down the wall had to be something big and we came up with this concept that they're talking about it as if this is something like they knew the wall was going to fall. And this I mean, I think Eric might be right on that, like, shit. We actually had the horn in that cache of dragon glass, like that's similar to the books that Sam and John find. But then we didn't make much of it, but we got to tear down the wall and let what could conceivably.
That's just such a shift in the balance of power.
Yeah,
to do that on a whim to bring down the wall, like I would. As a writer, I would have almost said, okay, we need to go back and we need to do a little bit of groundwork going into this season to lay this horn out and tell people what it is and where it is and how it can be used and then use it, because giving the White Walkers a dragon is a huge shift of the balance of power.
I think it's possible that both things are true, that there's a bullet point that says the wall will be destroyed by the Horn of Jorimund, and there's also a bullet point that says that the Night King will get an ice dragon, because there's a lot of textual evidence of there's a fact, like there's rumors that there's an ice dragon buried in the wall. There's rumors that there's a dragon buried below Winterfell, which can mean lots of different things. Like, some people say that's the source of the geothermal. It's an old wives' tale about why Winterfell stays warm. It's got a geothermal heat under it, and it stays unnaturally warm even during the worst of the winters. Also a metaphor to describe the fact that, like, Rhaegar's famous silver harp is buried with Lyanna, but you know,
could
there's all this
John himself in a weird way,
sure, because he's an ice so there's a lot of this kind of symbolism baked in. And also, one of George's other books that he wrote was literally about the ice dragon, so that could be something where he's mining this concept. So I feel like both of those things could be true.
If that's
and
the case,
then
yeah,
the double D's are like, well, let's just consolidate that. Right. We don't have the horn, we do have this dragon. Would people buy a magic white dragon being able to blow the wall down like the big bad wolf?
Then in that case, it's a good idea. Like, if you have both of those bullet points, that makes a lot of sense. Just, I wish they would have gotten to it a little bit better.
Yeah. I guess that's the thing is, like, other than that interview, it would have surprised me to know that, like, they just freestyled on how the wall gets knocked down. But, boy, they sure talked about it as if that's what they did.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Hey, last week we talked about our newest sponsor, Sonos, and how they're the manufacturer of these really high-end wireless speaker systems.
Yeah.
And and Jim and I both have got a copy now. Like last week, it's just me. Now you've gone into the Sonos experience,
and I watched Game of Thrones on it. It was awesome.
It is awesome.
5.1,
and it's so cool because, like, you know, the pain in the ass of traditional surround sound system is you have to, like, you know, run wires. You either got them run under your carpet and you snag it, and you got a big old mound in your carpet now, or you got to run them through the walls or through the crawl space, or just have ugly wires going here. This all you need is a source of power.
Yeah.
And you set up the first speaker and you put in your Wi-Fi, and it's like a two-step process. And then every additional speaker, they essentially discover each other. And there's maybe a bit of, like, the subwoofer asks you how much ass do you want to kick? and there's also really cool things, like there's got a way where you can sit in the middle and, like, it adjusts the delays and everything to, like, get the stereo effect to work just right.
Yeah, it seemed to work really well.
And it's like, I mean, you know, this stuff, when you open it, it's heavy duty.
Like, I'm impressed by the amount of sound that you get from a speaker that's roughly the size of, like, I don't know, a large coffee thermos.
Sure.
Like, the sound that you can get out of that. And I don't have mine set up in 5.1 or 5.2. What is it, 5.1?
5.1, yep.
I don't have it set up in 5.1 mode. I've actually got the little units just spread out throughout the house.
Yeah, so that's the cool thing. You can kind of set up different zones of your house.
Like,
and
you
can stream only to a specific zone. So it's not like you need the play base and these other things are just kind of satellites of the play base. It can be that, but it can also be like this thing where you have the play base hooked up to your TV and also these standalone room speakers that you can just stream to individually.
Right.
It's really like a hybrid between a 5.1 system and a whole home streaming.
And it's cool because I've got my zones are living room, kitchen, and bedroom. So like I can be listening. I can, while I'm cooking or doing dishes, I can have the TV in the living room and have the sound piped into the kitchen so I can clearly hear it without blowing the house out.
And then you can, when it's bedtime, put a Weem Away on on the bedroom speakers.
Or I can have the whole house. I can have the whole house jam into the same song. And it's super easy with the app to do that. So. So I'm just really impressed by, because we got the play bass, we got the sub, and we got two play ones. I'm really impressed by the sound quality.
Yeah, me too.
I'm really impressed by the ease and convenience and the packaging. Like, it was like everything is a super high-end experience. And, like, you can tell they got confidence in their products because there is no, like, extended. So it's like there's this quick start guide and that's it.
Yeah, it essentially says download the app.
Plug it in, download the app, you're done. And then for each additional speaker, it just gets easier. So I said, I'm gushing because I think it's a great product and it's awesome and it's a lot of fun to watch Game of Thrones on it. It's a lot of fun to play video games on it. It's a lot of fun to listen to music. Sonos, for the first time ever, is offering listeners of this year's podcast, the Game of Thrones podcast brought to you by Bald Move, 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use our promo code GOT10, that's capital G, capital O, capital T, 10, at Sonos.com to receive this exclusive offer. Another sponsor for this podcast is Bald Move itself at Club.
Sponsored it.
At club.baldmove.com. Not only are we customers of baldmove.com,
we're the president.
We're the president's founder. The dictator in chief. If you've enjoyed our coverage, and we've done a lot of podcasts, and our last podcast was downloaded in its first week by a million people are enjoying this podcast.
Wow.
Know that the only way we can do like three podcasts a week, the only way that we're going to be able to do the coverage of a Stranger Things, Mr. Robot, Walking Dead, American Horror Story, Westworld, all the stuff that we're going to be covering in the months and the year ahead, and the way we're going to be able to come back at Game of Thrones season 8 even stronger, the reason we're going to be able to continue rolling with Game of Thrones season 2 is because we have direct listener support. They're able to fund us full time so we can have the time and effort to put into these podcasts and give you the information and the community that you're craving for. And a great way to pay back is go to club.baldmove.com. It's not pure altruism. You get a lot out of it. You get a lot of special audio and video features, ad-free feeds, VIP access to the forums, a lot of special features by signing up at club.baldmove.com. And most importantly, you keep Bald Move operating at peak efficiency. Peak Game of Thrones, 3 podcasts a week efficiency. So thanks for all the many people who have joined the club thus far in the season, and hopefully a lot of you people will be sticking around and can support us in the future. Club.baldmove.com. JG asks us, what is the Lord of Light's end goal? With recent events, it seems like he has been almost setting up all these pieces so the Night King can get all the tools he needs to break through the wall and make an assault. Is it possible the Lord of Light is actually the Night King? Both the Lord here's the evidence. Both the Lord of Light and the Night King seem to share the same signature move of raising people from the dead. All the Lord of Light's moves seem to point all the characters in the direction of getting the Night King a dragon. The Lord of Light is the only god in Westeros that seems to actually be able to do things, such as create shadow babies, provide visions and fire, raising the dead.
I don't buy that, but okay.
Well, you're right, because the old gods
can,
if not raise the dead, then
certainly
provide
visions
and warg and do all kinds of stuff. Yeah. The Night King seemed like he was waiting or wanting the dragons to show up. He has his ice spears, big chains, and he's just sitting there watching the island of heroes. If the Lord of Light is on the side of good, then many of his moves seem to make very little sense. Is it possible the Night King can use fire as a magical telephone? So, to me, this is actually more evidence that
the Lord of the Light is on the other side of the spectrum of the same energy or godhood or intelligence that the Great Other is on.
Right.
They have very similar, but, you know, like, I don't know. The Emperor's got his Force Lightning, and Yoda's got his lifting a starship out of Dagobah. You know?
Equally dangerous.
Hey, did you see him throwing that Senate chamber around?
I did.
He fuck you up with that.
His backflips are superb.
Because, like, I don't... I mean, the one thing I guess that's got going for this is, why does the Lord of Light lead Beric and Thoros and the Hound to this mountain? Because that seems like... Huh. Now, maybe it's because he knew that he needed that John was going to need all three of those characters to get the... But that's like... It's almost like the Lord of Light is behind that plan, right? Like he approves, he tacitly approves of the stupid stealing a white plan?
This is a problem with mere mortals trying to figure out the plan of an omnipotent super being, right? Like,
yeah.
If you were to say, oh, well, it seems stupid because, or the Lord of Light must be working for this other side because they got a dragon and the Lord of Light pushed them in that direction. Well, maybe that dragon needs to happen so that something later down the line that changes the whole balance can happen, you know?
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's the thing that kicks Dany's butt into gear and gets her moving in the right direction when she wouldn't have without the dragon getting turned.
Yeah.
So it's a sacrifice to be made for a long-term goal. I don't know. I mean, I've always read it as the Lord of Light is in opposition to everything cold and dark and
right.
Like, everything that the Night King, or for our purposes here, the Great Other, stands for.
But also, we don't think at the end of this series that death will be defeated. Right? So, like, you know, like, we're not going to have a race of...
death? No.
Yeah.
No.
But so, I guess that's the thing. Like, you know, in Star Wars, they had this prophecy of Anakin's going to be the Messiah figure that brings balance to the Force.
Right.
Well, why did the Force need to be balanced when, like, you know, essentially... Does balance of Force mean the good controls the galaxy?
That seems like imbalance to me.
Right, because, like, for millennia, we're told the Jedi kind of held things down, and, like, was the universe in balance then? Like, is the presence of the Sith imbalancing it? Doesn't seem like it.
Right.
It could be that the Jedi themselves have gotten too far up their own ass and too crawled up in this ascetic warrior monks mythology that they needed to be brought to balance, and like Luke Skywalker and Anakin is like bringing the passion and the love and all that back into the order that's been missing. Like, this is a pretty hoary science fiction fantasy trope, but it could be, it's not like a war against good and evil. It's more of like trying to bring some sort of balance.
Yeah.
And because if the enemy of the Lord of Light is death, then that's never going to be defeated.
Sure.
It's just, you know, the Night King represents the complete victory of death. The Lord of the Light represents the staving off of that. And you can't ever have, like, you know, men can never be immortal and the Night King can't kill everybody. So, but you're right. We're trying to really fathom what a god is thinking.
Yeah.
Of logic that we barely understand and powers that we don't even fully understand how they work.
Yeah. I can't even pinpoint what Bran is thinking at any moment. So.
Right. Except for his sister looked pretty sweet the night she got married. Mary raped.
Right. Creep.
Casey from Akron, Ohio. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Army of Dead walking through the Fallen Wall at Eastwatch at the end of the episode. I didn't believe it until I went back and saw it for myself, but the dead formed the head of a direwolf. So she's talking about, this was going around the internet, is going around Reddit, the aerial shot where you see the Army of the Dead kind of streaming through the ruined section of the wall looks like a Mendelbrot plot, like, you know.
What do you see when you look at this?
Yeah, it looks like a Rorschach pattern.
Yeah.
But some people are seeing a direwolf sigil in this.
I can see it. I mean, I understand why people might say that, yeah.
I mean, I see a little bit, I guess, of an eye and a snout and ear, but it's certainly not like a dead-on impression, and like it's
like, what is the second set of ears that's and like coming off the neck of the wolf, and like, why are there like bubbles in him? And this does not scream direwolf sigil to me.
Okay, can we? My first question is, so what? Like, I'm going to grant it.
Okay.
I'm going to say, yes, absolutely, there's a dire wolf there.
I'm glad you asked, because Casey will helpfully tell you.
Okay, good.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's always been speculation that the Night King was once a Stark. They're pretty much the oldest family in the realm. This is entirely possible. Plausible, she says. Maybe this is just an Easter egg to the next season. If it's true and comes out that he was once a Stark, I'm curious what use this will have to the story.
I would say not all old people are Starks, but all Starks are old people. Like, yes, their lineage goes way back, but I think there were also non-Starks out there, right?
Well, so there's the book version of the Night King, which is not related. A lot of people love to tell me this. The Night's King, which is this old mythological figure that the 13th Lord Commander, who old Nan in the books tells us was a Stark, was seduced by this female White Walker, and he had an immoral relationship with her, and he subverted the Night's Watch and made them agents of the death, and had to be defeated. So I guess,
okay,
to the extent that, like, is probably a Northerner that got turned, was definitely a Northerner, definitely one of the First Men, and Starks are some of the oldest. That it would make all sense. But even Casey's here saying, what use will that have to the story? Like, I literally don't know. Like. Yeah. Like, it wouldn't. There's been evil Starks. There's been bad Starks.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, with a Stark being the ultimate evil, and then another Stark / Targaryen being the ultimate good, like, what?
I'm trying to think of bad Starks in the show. I can't actually think of any real bad Starks in the show, though. Right?
No. Yeah.
Like, the show, they're portrayed as this, you know, bastion of honesty and loyalty. And
like, Ned's brother
goodness.
Brandon seems like he could be kind of an asshole, but like in a meathead jock kind of way, like Biff Tanner.
Not in an undead takeover of the world.
If Biff Tanner is evil, then like maybe Brandon on his worst day could be that version of evil.
So it's maybe in the show they are going for something like that, and it's going to be a big twist, but then you have to say, where are they getting that from? Is it from Martin? Because...
Right.
All the legends of the Starks are not good, like you said.
And also, you've got, like, even the Targaryens, they're a mixed bag. You've got, like, Aegon, who seems like a really good guy, or, you know, for a guy who burns armies to death, he at least was, you know, trying to be a good king. You had Baelor the Blessed, you had Jaehaerys, and then you've got Aegon the Unworthy, and you've got the Mad King Aerys. Like, it's just, you know, like, so what?
I'm surprised this wasn't cited as, like, evidence for Jon or Bran potentially being the Night King.
maybe they a little bit were steeped in lore, because I guess that's the thing. Like, again, if he turns out to be a Stark, what is that going to blow Jon's mind? Is it gonna? It might be a book thing, but I just don't see like it could be a thing, but I don't know that it has to be a plot point. It might just be something that amuses Martin, like, oh, it turns out he's a Stark too.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe
and that goes back to my fan fiction theory that maybe Jon will have to be the Night's King, like he'll have to be the Davy Jones, Orlando Bloom kind of thing.
Right.
Attending theory is that Bran, already having established as an unusually powerful warg and a three-eyed raven, is getting some semblance of control or connection over the dead. So they're saying that, like, the fact that this army of the dead is forming into a Stark direwolf is
showing that... That's a weird thing for him to do.
Right, like, he could, like, have them drown in the sea, or he could have them form into a Stark...
Right, and continue their march toward the living.
How embarrassing for the Night King.
Yeah.
Because this thing is, like...
It's like, can you imagine...
He's flying on the dragon, he's like, yeah, kicking up, like, oh, what the fuck? What the fuck, direwolves? Where's my spiral, guys?
He gets a hold of, like, the Chinese Olympic halftime show team.
They're all doing this elaborate direwolf-based Tai Chi.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know where it's going. I don't know where it's going. And I don't...
That's great.
That's the thing. Like, it's the perfect question. So what? What if he is a Stark? What does that change in the books? And that's a great question. I'll leave that with the listeners to see if they want to follow through with it. Dana Kay, I didn't write in to correct it because I thought a lot of other people would, but you've now said on multiple occasions. She's talking about Dany. I've been saying that Dany has not gotten her period, and she smacks me down with a Dance of Dragons. She goes, there's the exact text. She was bleeding This is talking about Dany out in the fields of Drogon. She's bleeding, but it's only woman's blood. The moon is still a crescent, though. How can that be? She tried to remember the last time she had bled. The last full moon? The one before? The one before that? No, it cannot have been so long as that. She says, it sounds like she missed a period or two. This is why many have speculated, probably rightly, that in the books she's simply having a miscarriage.
Hmm.
So okay. She's either miscarrying Dario's kid or... that his dar, the Zolorak, or whatever the hell his name is. I completely boned that up. I thought it was a plot point that she, not just Baron, but like she wasn't getting her quote-unquote moon's blood anymore.
Hmm.
Very convenient that she always bleeds on the full moon. I wonder if like all of Westeros and Essos is cycled up to where...
This is how it goes. It's their what's the...
The Westerosi maxi pad? Bust operation over there.
The orbital lock. The title lock.
The torpedo lock.
Yeah. They got, I don't know, minstrel lock with the moon.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's all about, it's, you know, because blood's mostly water. And when you got it all lined up like that, it just pulls it right out of you.
Sure does.
It's got magic seasons. Why not? Rob B. So thanks for that correction. That was a shock to me. Robbie, I feel that for Arya's story to achieve real closure, she has to have one major kill left in her that has to utilize her faceless man skills, since they keep reminding us of her ability to take faces.
Yeah.
And it has to be a name on her list because that also has come up multiple times.
Yeah.
Littlefinger was big enough, but he was all too easy.
Yep.
I can't believe you're agreeing with all this. I can't see a scenario where her arc climaxes with the White Walkers, spy assassin abilities are wasted in a basically conventional war. I get the wild-ass guesses are a waste of your time, but my question for you is, who is left but Cersei? And the killing of Cersei, as we talked, by Arya...
The Red Woman.
Is not...
Who says she's going to come back to Westeros and die?
You're right. And she also said that she looked in Arya's eyes and said they'll meet again.
Yeah.
That's probably the answer.
Yeah.
Melisandre. But
whose face would she take to do that? Because, I mean, if you're going to say, okay, she's got to use her skills, then she needs to take a face.
The other thing is, like, maybe she doesn't. Maybe this is something that Melisandre just has seen and accepted, much like Jojen did of his fate, and it'll be something, because she's... You know, the other thing we learned last season is she's very old. That was a theory that we had heard, but she like might be unnaturally old.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she is kind of like, this is analogous to what people have read into like Benjen's arc, that like Benjen was just tired of fighting and he's lived beyond his time. And Arya is going to set her free so much as she is going to be getting her vengeance.
Yeah.
Because I don't agree that she needs, like, I think killing the entire Frey house with the faceless man mask might be that, like, I don't know that I need to see her faceless man it up anymore. I mean, I'm not saying I don't, but I'm saying, like, I feel like I don't need to see her use trickery. Because, like, if she kills Cersei, unless, you know, we talked about that theory of, like, Jaime trying to stop her from bleeding out her throat. Like, it feels good for Arya's arc. It doesn't feel fitting for Cersei's arc.
You think maybe Arya's arc is basically over? Because, like you said, that Walder Frey thing ticks all the boxes, right?
Yeah.
Faceless man skills, killing someone on her list. She's now home. She's released Nymeria into the wild. Like, she's no longer the lone wolf.
I'm kind of bummed that Nymeria and her wolf pack didn't figure larger into the plot either.
Yeah.
Like, I really thought that was going to be a thing.
I just think Arya's arc... Now that you say it, might actually be over. We might have seen the climax of it.
The mountain? I mean, because the thing is, she can't kill the mountain because the hound called dibs.
Yeah, who would satisfy you more? The hound killing the mountain or Arya killing the mountain?
The hound.
Yeah.
Like, right? But on the other hand...
And for Cersei, it'd definitely be Jaime or...
But on the other hand...
she has to kill the hound to kill the mountain.
The hound just said, I'm not going to get in her way.
Maybe he could do it. Like, baseless speculation. She takes the hound's face.
And then she doesn't kill the
someone
hound.
Off
the hound
her
list. Just dies in battle.
Okay, she takes his face however
faceless
she gets
men,
it.
Dude, the faceless men take the face from the people that go and poison themselves at the fountain, too.
That's true, yeah.
Right.
Maybe he's just done. And then she takes his face and goes and kills the mountain.
Boom. That's
checked off the list.
That gives your check off a name on the list. It gives you the Faceless Man power. It also allows that hound to, in a way, have a vengeance because Arya is his protege, as well as she's wearing his face.
Yeah.
Possible. I mean, we're getting fan fiction-y here. But,
we are, yeah.
I mean, that's...
I do think there's something to say for the idea that Arya's arc is mostly complete at this point. Or even all the way complete as well.
Yeah. I mean, if her arc is going to complete, it's got to be a journey away from being a psychopath and towards a more fully realized and actualized person.
And I feel like she just took a huge step in that direction coming back to Winterfell and reconnecting with Sansa.
Yes. Yes. And finding a way to see past their childhood pets and work together. And so I'm with you. I don't know that I need more from her arc. I kind of want more, but, you know...
I think I'll always want more, though. Even when the show is over, reaches the climax.
This is going to be like every other beloved show I've had. Like it's going to be like Breaking Bad. It's going to be like The Leftovers. It's going to be like all these shows that have wrapped up in a satisfying way. It's like, man, I'm really going to miss it.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to watch a lot more. And the thing is, HBO seems like they're going to promise us a lot more in this universe. So we'll see.
Yeah, at least one spinoff.
Mike, is there a precedent for animal whites in the books? Are there like white raccoons or birds or ocelots out there?
Yeah, just the ocelots.
Just the ocelots. The white raccoons.
It's the only animal dumb enough to be turned.
I was gonna say during the witching hour, they come and invade all of the trash cans of the north with their opposable thumbs.
You thought rabies was bad. Wait till you get bit by one of them.
White rabies.
Yep.
I don't think so. Like in the books, the White Walkers are described. The others are described as riding like ice spiders in the battle.
Okay.
Like I don't like this whole thing where they're riding skeletal horses. I think is a show construct, and the polar bears seems to be something that the Double D's had a boner for. Period. So I don't think so. It makes sense. Like I don't know why. You know, like it's kind of like the like Bran warged into an animal, but he also could warg into a human. And there's some stuff in the prologue and epilogues of Dance where you see a skin changer from the wildling skin changer try to warg into a human, and it just goes spectacularly bad. Like it's a big taboo; you're not supposed to do it. And he tries to warg into a woman as he's about to die, and she just goes insane, starts ripping her face apart, and then he settles for warging into a wolf. Before he dies. So, but Bran can do it, or he can do it at least with Hodor, who's got some brain damage. So it seems like you the White Walkers can only raise up like undead humans, but maybe exceptionally powerful ones can do animals, or maybe it's easier to do animals. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough information out there, but yeah, I've never heard of a white animal in the books, but I also wouldn't bet my life on it. So that's it. That's the feedback we had this week.
All right, cool.
Again, we'll be back next week for a season wrap up and a spoiler season wrap up. And then the week after that, we'll start our consumption of season two, and we will have not have separate podcasts like we did before. We'll have a spoiler free recap and feedback session. So if you want to, this is not for your guys, but the way we do it is we do spoiler free, and then we play the music at the end of the podcast, and then we add a spoiler version.
Yeah.
And last week it turned into, you know, just in, like impacts of this episode on future plots or like, you know, relevant pieces of foreshadowing, but it also turned into just theory of the week stuff too. It's just that's the current ongoing conversation about Game of Thrones. So I'm excited about that to fill out our Game of Thrones catalog a little bit more. That's our plans for coverage. And also, we, you know, as we mentioned in the housekeeping section, we've got lots and lots of stuff coming up. We've got Mr. Robot coming up. We've got Stranger Things coming up that we're going to prime the pump a bit by doing a complete rewatch of season one.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other thing? We got Walking Dead coming
up. Walking Dead, yep.
Me and Cecily are starting the American Horror Story cult season next week. Lots of cool stuff coming down the pike. We're not pulling up our tent stakes and riding into off into the sunset just because Game of Thrones is over. We're keeping on rolling. So join us at baldmove.com. Follow us on the social media, all the social media at baldmove. Send in your feedback at gameofthrones@baldmove.com, and we will see you here next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.